coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio. Located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. Hey, did you miss me? I'm back. HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com. No, I'm sorry. HagmanPI.com. However, if you happen to just throw HagmanReport.com in there, it'll bounce it to HagmanPI.com. So all's good. HagmanPI.com for latest news information, stuff that is on my mind, such as at HagmanPI.com right now. The First Amendment has been basically rendered moot. It's my new word of the day, moot. Eric the Tech, how are you?
I'm moot.
You're moot. You are moot. And I'm mute at times. Eric the Tech on assignment, as I was over the last couple of days. It's a long story. Along with some personal things I had to take care of, in addition to working through dealing with some stuff with Shatter Ops. But again, the First Amendment has been a just wiped clean, rendered moot, obliterated. Weaponization panel details government collusion with universities to censor speech. Now look, this is not anything new. If you go to HagmanPI.com, I have posted the report authored or published on the 6th of November and authored by the Senate subcommittee, not Senate. I apologize. Let me get to that point, or let me get to that report right here. I should have had it, but I didn't. Here it is right here. This is a report by the committee. On the judiciary, and the Select Subcommittee on Weaponization of the Federal Government. This is by the U.S. House of Representatives. Now, all this is well and good. Folks, please, read my first couple of sentences there. It is extremely easy. Now, I'm opining and paraphrasing. It's very, very easy to point out what happened by way of issuing this report. However, the questions that you and I and every American, patriotic, red-blooded American must answer is, what in the hell are we going to do about this? Because Jordan can talk a good game. The reps can talk a great game. They can issue all the reports in the world. Meanwhile, this is still happening. In case you haven't noticed, Stephen Crowder published 3 pages of the Nashville shooter's manifesto yesterday. Yes, this relates to this report. Okay. We need to stop talking and act. We need action and criminal charges to be filed right now. And you can quote me on that. Actions and criminal charges against the government officials within the Department of State, within the universities, and those within big tech, all working together through this election integrity partnership. And once you understand what that is and who's behind that, you'll understand how infiltrated this country is. Remember EIP. Election Integrity Partnership. Remember the names. Remember the people. Big tech. Even today, you think Elon Musk has got a handle on X or Twitter or whatever? No, doubtful. So, okay. So we have this report. Big flipping deal. Hey, there's a lot of talk. A lot of stuff going on, but no action. Okay, on Hagman PI, I take you to Nashville Manifesto, Marxist Department of Justice. They hide the woke motives of the trans shooter. They kill. It's a horrific manifesto. And my heart goes out to the victims, the six victims of this shooting at the Coventry Christian School, Christian Academy. But Steven Crowder yesterday and today, earlier today, kind of adding on from yesterday, he released the first pictures of the first three pages, handwritten pages of this loony transvestite mentally ill killer. This, the writings of this Audrey Hale, who I guess decided to become a male and was enabled by people who should be in jail. Shades of Quail coming in. Wow. Three rhymes. Hale, male, jail. All right. Folks, the Department of Justice deliberately hid the from the public. The Biden regime, their Department of Justice hid this manifesto from the public. Why? Because it shows this woke, obsessed Department of Justice and wanting to protect the transvestite, mentally ill pieces of crap and every enabler of people like that. And I'm going to tell you something else. The doctors, the nurses, the people sitting at the reception desk in these clinics that go ahead and say, yeah, we should operate and cut your dick off, and we should operate and, you know, cut your breasts off, and we should operate and make you a new dick from your forearm, or whatever. Or we should, whatever the case might be, arrest them all. Arrest them all. And the states better have the balls to come out and say, you know what, this is wrong. These people are mentally ill. Now, you got to ask yourself, how did this person get a gun? How did this person get guns, plural? And given the fact that 4473s, form 4473s had to be filled out, well, guess what? Guess what? Hey, guess what? I'm starting to sound like Biden. I'm going to whisper. Yeah, guess what? As usual, this mope was on the radar of the feds. Gee, what a flippin' surprise, as they all are. But here's the thing. The minute the electrons were imposed and YouTube, this Crowder episode was put on YouTube and the electrons were really aggravated by that. The wokesters of the left on YouTube immediately took this Crowder episode down. Because why? Because they don't allow publications or productions that glorify or enable criminal organizations. Huh? Think about that. Look into that, folks. And then one last thing. Of course, in Los Angeles, there was a rally on Sunday, a pro-Israel rally. And of course, you've got, anytime you have a pro-Israel rally, you got a bunch of pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinians come on and, you know, all kinds of unpleasantries break out. Just take a look at this story again, HagmanPI.com. The guy on the left side of your picture is a 69-year-old guy. He's a Jewish guy, and minding his own business, essentially, just saying, "Look, you know, support Israel." All right, the Muppet on the right, the bald-headed—I don't even know what you call that—takes a bullhorn and smashes the guy on the left. There was some exchange, verbal exchange, but without further provocation, the guy on the right takes a bullhorn and crashes the bullhorn into the head of the guy on the left. The guy on the left then loses his balance from this 310-pound sack of skin, falls backwards, hits his head on the pavement. and is dead within the hour. That's in Los Angeles. Folks, it's coming to a town near you. Have you heard about this? If not, why not? I'm going to tell you why not. This is video three. It's 42 seconds. And then we're going to bring on the legendary John Moore, thelibertyman.com. If you haven't been listening to John, you've got to do it. He's got a radio show every weekday. He's got guests on every day. And if you haven't been to his website, you've got to bookmark his website and support all those who support him. That's thelibertyman.com. It'll be in the program description box at hagmanpi.com. But listen to this. This is an oldie but goodie from the best of collection. In our previous show prep, you may or may not remember this, but remember what is happening. The press is trying to control what you think. And you know, when they say the quiet part out loud, oh, isn't it great when they do that? Because Mika Brzezinski, along with Joe, hey, I have a dead intern in my office, Scarborough. Those two, you know, Mika Brzezinski, the spawn of Zygmunt Brzezinski. I'm going to stop right there before I get myself in further trouble. And Scarborough, oops, how did that dead intern get there? In my office. Yeah, look it up. I'm telling you. They say the quiet part out loud here. You've probably heard this before. Go ahead and clip three.
Who were Trump voters and are still Trump supporters. They go, yeah, you guys are going crazy. He's doing, what are you so surprised about? He's doing exactly what he said he's going to do.
Well, and I think that the dangerous, you know, edges here are that he's trying to undermine the media, trying to make up his own facts. And it could be that while unemployment and the economy worsens, he could have undermined the messaging so much that he can actually control exactly what people think. And that is our job.
Yeah, if you look at the issues, Yamiche is right. He's doing exactly what he said. It's
right.
It's.
Yeah. Did you hear what they said? Did you hear what Mika said? Too many dinner table conversations with daddy and too many tryst-like appointments with Joe prior to making an honest woman out of her, huh? If that ever happened. That never happened in terms of making the honest part, but I digress. With me, John Moore, thelibertyman.com, here to talk about a couple of things that you maybe haven't heard of that he's got an exclusive of dropped on his radio show. That's The Liberty Man. If you go to thelibertyman.com and make sure you drill down, listen to the current episode and then drill down for previous episodes for some really great stuff. So he's got a couple of things, a couple of big story items that we're going to be talking about. John, thanks.
I like that picture of him when he was younger.
If you haven't noticed, Doug, I got a new photo. I'm on the extreme right.
I saw that.
I'm in Vietnam. I've been out of high school about 15 months. And I'm wearing my Tiger Stripe camouflage. I got a Thompson submachine gun. I got bandoliers of machine gun ammunition. I had that photo taken to impress my girlfriend. I don't know if it worked or not, but that was the purpose of it.
Well, I saw that. I wasn't going to comment on that, only because the purple and blue-haired, tatted-up, multiple-pierced Gen Z, ignoramuses of today might be triggered by such a photo as this. But I think that's
a great photo. I hope so. Well, that's the same Thompson I did carry on a daily basis. I want to paint a mental picture for you, Doug. Yeah, I know you've had some security assignments. So just imagine this. It's Vietnam. I'm walking down the street carrying in my left hand a attaché case with enough cash to buy a brand new Jaguar sports car, full ticket price, in addition to documents from the CIA, RAND Corporation, and military intelligence. My right hand is the same Thompson that you saw me holding there. And my right hip is my 1911 45 caliber pistol. And I'm by myself walking down the street in Vietnam, going between the different buildings I had to go to in the city that I worked in, Can Tho, the capital of the Mekong Delta. And in addition to those things, I had an attitude. The attitude being, well, the attitude being, and I wanted to live through this, when somebody saw me, Viet Cong or otherwise, don't mess with this guy. I don't know who he is, but I certainly don't want to mess with him. And that carried forward through most of my life, Doug, to the point where, as a private investigator, I would walk into a bar and everybody would stop talking and look at me. So the attitude has stood me well over these decades. No, I just had the attitude, but wearing a coat and tie, trench coat, and that's it.
Okay. You know, yeah, and to lay some additional groundwork right now, I want to mention this. Between John Moore and I, and this is going to segue, I'm going to dispense with this before we get into what you've got to say. Because the highlight, really, of this show is what John has to bring to the table. People who have been following the Donald Trump trial have seen this. And there's a number of takeaways. I've got two additional videos. We may not get to the third. This is the second video, too, in the show notes. Okay. Donald Trump was already decided that he's guilty of fraud by Letitia James, by the old Gilligan, that's Judge Engoron, and of course his hack, a political hack of a law clerk, Allison Green, who has broken every contribution law there is and keeps whispering sweet nothings along with Letitia James in Engoron's ear. Okay, this show trial, this Marxist show trial. But that's one part of the issue. The second part of the issue is Americans kind of know what's going on. I think that this is a Marxist show trial. This is a Russian-like show or U.S. or Soviet-style show trial. And this is to keep President Trump off the ballot. Like Alex Jones, okay, during that trial, President Donald Trump was already found guilty. This is just kind of a ceremonial, again, a show trial. But the third issue, the third part of about this is with every type of courtroom drama. And I was kind of figuring, and to the best of my ability to figure, between myself and John Moore, we've been in more federal, state, and municipal courtrooms between the two of us to fill up probably 3 full years of business days.
Easily.
That might be more. Okay. And we've had our share of rogue judges, odd juries, stupid or very smart prosecutors, as well as defense attorneys. And we've seen a lot of stuff most people don't see. But the other takeaway from this is, I said this before, you watch. If they can convince Michelle Obama to run, if you start seeing her name on the polls, oh boy, watch out. But they're trying to get Biden out. They know they're between a rock and a hard place right now with Biden. That Biden's not going to carry the day. No. Watch this 2.5 minutes. I'm going to bring John on, and he's got the floor. Here it is.
Donald Trump made a "my lips are sealed" gesture outside his civil fraud trial today, but he was anything but tight-lipped on the stand.
Extraordinary tension inside that courtroom, with Donald Trump really pushing and pushing and pushing the judge.
Trump sure looked ready for a fight as he glared at the camera. He clashed with Judge Arthur Engoron from the moment he took the stand, giving long speeches instead of yes and no answers. "This is a very, very unfair trial. Very," Trump complained. "Control your client," the judge told Trump's attorneys. "If you can't, I will." He even snapped at lawyer Alina Haba, telling her to sit down when she insisted maybe he should listen to Trump's long-winded rants. She hit back outside the courthouse.
"I was told to sit down today. I was yelled at, and I've had a judge who is unhinged slamming a table. Let me be very clear. I don't tolerate that in my life. I'm not going to tolerate it here.
Things got so heated that less than an hour in, the judge called for a 15-minute recess in an attempt to cool things down. But when Trump came back, his attitude was unchanged. He called the attorney general a fraud and the entire trial a political witch hunt.
This is a scam.
When he was done testifying, he declared the day a win for him.
You saw what I had to say today, and it was very conclusive. Everything we did was absolutely right.
He may feel emboldened by bombshell new polls that show him beating President Biden in 2024.
New polls are showing some very unfavorable trends for President Biden.
The New York Times Siena College poll shows Trump leading in 5 of the 6 most important battleground states.
The polls are rattling many top Democrats, including former Obama advisor David Axelrod, who says Biden should reconsider running.
He just has to ask himself, is this the best path?
CBS News Chief Election and Campaign Correspondent Robert Costa.
Are there alarm bells going off in Washington right now? How are Democrats reacting to these poll numbers?
Democrats are not happy with these poll numbers, but at the same time, nobody is looking to push President Biden out. At this point, it's going to be President Biden's decision about what he wants to do with his own future. And everyone close to the president tells me he's in this race and he's not getting out.
Yeah, you just witnessed the Thorazine shuffle by Biden there. More on this here momentarily, along with everything that John's brought to the table. Before I get to John, let me dispense with this. I love our sponsors. I love the people who support us. We have a whole new litany of sponsors only because they are not woke. They're not adherent to the woke agenda. And their products are, in my view, based on my own experience, above anything I've ever seen. And one of those, of course, is healthwithdoug.com. Folks, did you know that one of the leading reasons that skin begins to sag, and John Moore does not have this problem, and form wrinkles isn't necessarily because of old age, no, but because our bodies are missing out on essential collagen. You see, we produce 10% less collagen every decade once we hit 30. And I got to tell you, that's a major reason behind the pesky wrinkles, you know, whether you see them up here or wherever you see them. Adding just a little collagen to your diet. Oh, you put that up. I was going to show you this. This, what's that? Oh, this is the bag of collagen right here. See, I'm telling you, I take this. This is unopened, the open ones at my home. But anyway, that's why myself, along with tens of thousands of people, have turned to this cutting-edge new substance to help reduce visible signs of aging. I mean, look at me. I'm a specimen of just that. Okay, Eric the Tech, shh. Look, these five collagen types are difficult to find on their own. They really are. If you look at the contents and stuff and try to find. But they're all included in every scoop. And what I do is I mix a serving with my orange and mango juice and in the morning. And that gives my skin the building blocks it needs to reignite this youthful glow that I know I've got. And it comes through right to you because you've told me what a handsome dude I am. Look, the best part I love, and this is important, you get 53% off, okay, until supplies run out. And I'm not even sure that's, you better get on this right now. You better go to healthwithdoug.com right now, okay? Plus, with every order, okay, you get gifts, again, until supplies run out. You'll receive several additional gifts valued over $500, free with every order for a limited time, including free VIP live health and fitness coaching for life. I am so sorry I stumble over this all of the time. My apologies. It's a free new ebook titled The 14 Foods for Amazing Skin, a 60-day satisfaction guarantee, and you can't beat this even with a big stick, free shipping. Get yours now by going to healthwithdoug.com, healthwithdoug.com, healthwithdoug.com. You won't regret it. I did hear from a couple of listeners who have ordered this and very happy, very happy. So just saying, do it now. Healthwithdoug.com. All right. I'm going to shut up now. In fact, I'm going to go have lunch or dinner or whatever and just turn it over to John. John, how are you? Go ahead.
I'm fantastic. Well, Doug, you covered some things we didn't talk about before the show. Earlier in the show, you mentioned these healthcare professionals who are quite ready, willing, and able to cut off the genitals of teenage boys and teenage girls. So I'm going to ask you a question, Doug. In all 50 states, I believe, if a 15-year-old girl goes into a bar and orders a shot of whiskey, she's committing a crime, and the bartender is also committing a crime. Is that accurate?
Gee, I muted myself. 100% accurate, yeah.
Of course it is. Now, the prosecuting attorney, district attorney in all 50 states would gladly prosecute the bartender for serving an ounce of whiskey to this girl. The juvenile authorities would take her into custody. Yep. And there's a reason for that. The reason being, this 15-year-old girl does not have the maturity to decide to consume alcohol. And the law in all 50 states prohibit serving alcohol to a 15-year-old girl.
I know some 50-year-old girls like that. There are women like that, too. But go on. Yes.
Oh, roger that. Now, how can it be in about, I don't know how many states, 10 or 12, maybe more, maybe less, that same 15-year-old girl can walk into a hospital and have a graduate of Harvard medical school cut off her breasts and no crimes being committed? Now, consuming 1 ounce of whiskey will affect that girl for several hours at the most. That's it. That's all it's going to do. Cutting her breasts off is something that will affect her, obviously, the rest of her life. How can the same girl be allowed to make one decision and be prohibited from making the other within civil society? How is that even possible, Doug?
Because you got a bunch of morons running the system, and you got a bunch of doctors who are morons agreeing to this, and nurses agreeing to this who are morons, who have no ethics, who have no morality, who have no spirituality, at least not the godly kind. And you've got a bunch of really mopes that are couch potatoes saying, yeah, well, you know, whatever they want to do, it's okay. No, it's not okay. But go on.
Well, it's how can both belief systems occupy the same space in the same brain? Which obviously they do. The girl is obviously, who wants her breast cut off, is obviously mentally ill. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. It's the responsibility of the mature adults to not go along with her mental illness. In my state, the state of Missouri, we have made it a crime for healthcare professionals to cut the breast off a young lady below the age of 18. To cut off the genitals of a young boy below the age of 18. We, in the state of Missouri, we think normally. Thank goodness. I don't want to dwell on that, but I just want to make a point there about how the dichotomy of both laws existing in a number of states, allowing both things to be the law, and the mental illness behind it. Moving on from there, as you mentioned earlier, I've been in many jury trials. I don't know how many. I've been on a witness stand quite a few times. Now, I don't know, since I'm not part of the Trump defense.
But I got to ask you, have you ever thrown a TV at a judge?
No.
And been escorted out of the county by state police?
No, sir.
Okay. I'm just asking because I have.
Okay, well, congratulations.
Thanks. But look, I'm not bragging. The reason I said that is because I got to admire President Trump. When the judge says, you're not, I'm not here to listen to you, or I'm not here to hear what you have to say. I mean, at that point, seriously? I don't even know what to say to that, okay?
Well, Doug, here's, okay. Once again, you and I were not part of the Trump legal defense team, but I've been in many of these trials, and without a doubt, the legal defense team did a psychological profile on this judge. They may have even brought in a psychological professional to do a complete analysis of this judge's personality with the following goal in mind. What would it take to unhinge this judge? What would it take to get this judge red-faced and beating the table? And I don't know they did this, but I believe they probably did and probably should have. And that's how they proceeded, was to get this judge unhinged, get him red-faced, get him to the point where he's slamming the table, yelling at defense counsel, which certainly achieved the goal of the defense team to make this judge look like he's completely unhinged in front of the well, there is no jury, is there? But in front of all the spectators.
Yeah. And I again, I can relate. Again, this is not about me, but I can relate to the very same thing that happened in my case, where the judge got up and it was under the context, very briefly. It was when I was showing the organized fraud in a $1.5 million workers' comp case. I had gone undercover as someone who I wasn't. The judge took issue with that, although it was perfectly legal and actually orchestrated by the district attorney as well as independent counsel. And he said, I don't like lawyers in my courtroom. Get the hell out of my courtroom. Stood up and really kind of came at me. So I just put a TV between him and me. It just so happened it was a little bit pushed more of a, you know, it was a small TV, but more of a more of a defensive mechanism. Right. And of course, you know, but see, you're exactly right. Your experience in this case, your vast experience, has given, in my view, a very, very good analysis of the defense v. the unhinged judge and court system. And by the way, Allison Greenfield, the judge's clerk, is nothing but a political hack who has broken the law through political donations. And that is... That should be grounds for dismissal, if not outright, or appeal, if not outright dismissal. But I digress. Go on, sir.
Well, one of the things that I worked for, one of the attorneys I worked for as an in-house, I was his second chair. That's the person who is in the courtroom to help the attorney with witnesses and with evidence. So I was the second chair. I was his paralegal. I was an investigator. Mr. Charles Shaw. You probably may not know the name, but you probably saw the film The Great Escape with Steve McQueen.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that movie was based on a book Mr. Shaw wrote about his being captured and escaping from five different German POW camps in World War II. So Mr. Shaw was highly regarded. He passed away in 2001, but he was voted by his fellow attorneys in Eastern Missouri as the best criminal defense attorney for decades. Anyway, we would do these analysis, and one jury trial comes to mind, a federal jury trial, where we analyzed the federal judge to make sure we didn't get sideways with this judge. He was a former officer in the United States Navy, and strictly by the books, and we understood that, and we made sure that we complied with his protocols so we did not get sideways with the judge. Anyway, one of the things that we would do during some of these trials and many of these trials was to build in a basis for appeal if and when we lose, and if and when we did lose. And I think that may be some of what's going on with Trump's defense team, is to build in appealable error, and in this case, appealable error on the basis of the judge's behavior. And that's exactly what's taking place. Whether Trump's legal team intended this to happen or not, what they've done by having this judge act out the way the judge acted out, is to build in appealable error. What do you think, Doug?
I can't disagree with you on that, and I think it, when you are coming from a position of weakness, which obviously this judge is. Pushed by a Soros-backed district attorney, Fannie Willis, okay, over something that there are no victims. There's really no lies. There's nothing. There's no there to this case. So the judge, as you point out, is already at a disadvantage. So you are absolutely correct. I think the response shows how correct you are on this. Go ahead, sir.
Absolutely. Well, I don't want to dwell on that too much longer, but we can always come back to it. Sam Mitchell, a mutual friend of ours, Sam Andrews, he stated publicly yesterday, so I can repeat what he said on my radio show. He has friends that are active duty Navy SEALs. His friends that are active duty Navy SEALs are telling him, quote unquote, we have Navy SEALs, U.S. Navy active duty Navy SEALs on the ground in Israel right now on the 7th day of November 2023. We don't know what their mission statement is, but my belief, my hope and prayer is that the mission statement and their mission is to repatriate American hostages from Hamas. That's the most likely scenario. I don't know that it is, but I hope that it is. What do you think, Doug?
I heard the same thing about a week and a half ago, like I was saying off air, and I think you're exactly right. And it's only right. I can't imagine Blinken, for example, giving the authorization for that. I can't imagine anyone in the Biden regime giving the order for that. But I do think that the military acting properly is rescuing America, or is attempting to rescue American hostages. Even Lady thinks so, the studio dog. So, I think I think you're right, and I think it's only fair. But, it kind of takes me back to, under this regime, folks, Operation Eagle Claw, attempt to rescue the hostages in Iran back on April 24th of 1980. However, now we have the Navy SEALs in this case. So, but this is a Carter on steroids in the White House, directing this. But, I do believe in the Navy SEALs. Go ahead, sir.
Absolutely. Well, the few Navy SEALs I've known and worked with are great guys, and they do the right thing for the right reason. But while we're on the topic of the military, we have the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, Space Force, Air Force. I don't know if I left out any, but there's only one of all the military branches that's met its recruiting goals, and that's the U.S. Marines. Everyone else is falling short, including the Air Force and the Space Force and so forth. The Army has activated several hundred, maybe more than 1,000 men from their normal duties, taking them to the special school where they train them to be recruiters. We have multiple sources, including my friend Marie Lassiter, who sits on the Selective Service Board of Texas County, Missouri. She says, in her opinion, that they're getting ready to implement the draft, the Selective Service. Once again, the Selective Service was discontinued about half a century ago. It's a different world. In 1972, 73, when the Selective Service was still in effect, 95 out of 100 young men would be eligible to go into the U.S. military. Now it's only 20 out of 100. They will be drafting women, by the way. This is a whole new ballgame, drafting women. And the 20% that are eligible are also highly sought after by the Fortune 500. And the 80% are too dumb, too fat, too drugged up, too many criminal convictions, or a combination of two or more of the above. They're probably going to have to reduce the standards, which are already greatly reduced from when I went in the military. IQ standards, physical fitness standards, drug standards, criminal convictions, in order to bring these numbers up. What do you think, Doug?
Draft them all. If they have purple hair and body piercing and tats and they're a confused, if they're confused about their sexuality, put them on the front lines. Okay? I'm serious. You voted, if you did vote, you voted for this. You pick up, you go serve your country. And I'll just bet you that upon your return, your attitude will have a slight adjustment. But compare that to that picture on John Moore's front page, thelibertyman.com, of a young soldier in Vietnam, regardless of what you think about the legitimacy of Vietnam, regardless of that. There it is right there. A very young, dapper, and well-armed John Moore. Okay, But compare that to today. Are we sending our best? Doubtful. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I was one of 500,000 men and a few women, the nurse corps, that were in Vietnam during any given year, during the heights of that war. And we were all at our physical best at the time, all of us in our late teens, early 20s. The first war, by the way, that was mostly fought by teenagers. The average age in combat was 19 years old. I just turned 20 2 weeks before I went to Vietnam, so I was right in about the same category. While teenage boys, young men, do make great soldiers, they really don't have the maturity to deal with the reality of combat, and we found that out also. A more mature man, even just 2 or 3 years older, is far better suited emotionally, psychologically, to be in combat than a 18 or 19-year-old young man. They simply don't have the maturity to deal with the realities of combat, which is absolutely brutal. My youngest grandson is a senior in high school. He's 17. His twin sister is the same age, obviously. But they'll be... well, the young lady won't be because of some health issues, but the young man is an athlete. He's got a college scholarship already to be a wrestler at his chosen university. I'll do what I can to keep him out of the Army. I don't want to see his life wasted for a rich man's war. I really don't.
And all wars are bankers' wars, and this reminds me of the movie Platoon. I don't know what your thoughts of that movie, if you ever saw it.
Charlie, I saw it.
But you know, the duality, this battle of wills between two sergeants, it was the plot of the movie. One good and the other evil, of course. And this examination of the brutality of all-out war and the duality of the men in this conflict, I think, reflects on real life scenarios. So what we're seeing here is really a battle between good and evil. And it's even within our own infrastructure. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's your heads up. If you're a parent or a grandparent of a person between or about to be 18 and I think 25 or 26 is the cutoff. It'll probably extend the age also, since there would be such a lack of qualified men and women. Please do whatever you can to keep that youngster out of the military. If they end up being drafted, there's a high likelihood that if they do come back, that they'll be psychologically hurt the rest of their lives. A very high probability of being injured or killed, obviously, for no good purpose. The last time U.S. military defended the United States against a foreign enemy was 1812. Every war since then was something America did not need to be involved in, quite frankly. I've done the summary before, but let's do a quick summary. Not going to the Civil War, which was not about slavery, and that's easily proven. But the Spanish-American War was based on the battleship Maine being sunk by Cuban commandos. Well, it was found out decades later that the battleship Maine blew itself up. Its boiler exploded and went to the bottom of Havana Harbor. So we did not need to be in that war, obviously. The World War I, we had the Lusitania. The German embassy was running ads in the New York Times. Do not book passage on this ship. It will be a legitimate target of war. Americans booked passage on it anyway. As the convoy approached Ireland, it dropped back from the convoy, making itself a tempting target for a German U-boat, which sunk it, getting us into that war we had no business being in. John Kennedy's father got a note delivered to him by the chancellor of the president of England, the chancellor, prime minister of England, Winston Churchill. Get this right, John. Which he delivered hand carried to President Roosevelt, giving the date and the time of the attack on Pearl Harbor. once again, a war we had no business being in. We ended up being on the side of a man far worse than Adolf Hitler. If you measure evil by the body count, our ally, Joe Stalin, was at least three times, if not four times, as evil as Adolf Hitler, going by body count alone. We did not be in the need of that war. If we had been in that war, Hitler probably would have defeated communism, and then we could have finished off Hitler later if needed, but that's that war. The Korean War was a legal war because of treaty obligations, but once again, General MacArthur wanted to nuke the Chinese. Truman's advisor, who was later found to be a communist agent, told President Truman, oh, no, President, we can't do that. The Chinese have nukes also. Well, it turned out they didn't. And that advisor was a communist. My war was based on the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which luckily, before he died, Robert McNamara published in his book that the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which was the basis for the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, was based on a fabrication. There was no attack of North Vietnamese boats against the U.S. Navy. It simply did not happen. And my war was based on that fantasy. Saddam Hussein was not a nice guy, on one hand. On the other, we had General Colin Powell make an absolute fool in front of the entire world of himself, showing the fabricated evidence, make-believe evidence, of the yellow cake enriched uranium that Saddam Hussein was allegedly getting, which he did not get.
And by the way, I originally fell for that, and I issue apologies for anyone who followed me back then. Go on, sir.
Well, General Powell unfortunately took the clot shot, and he's dead. I regard General Powell as a man of honor who was tricked. Now, before George Bush went to war with Iraq, he consulted with everybody in his cabinet except one man, the one man who has actually been in combat, General Colin Powell. Now, how can that happen? You're about to go to war, and you have a staff of your trusted men and women, your key people, and you don't consult the only guy who's actually been in a war, General Colin Powell, your Secretary of State. I noticed, and you may not notice this, Doug, but shortly after General Powell was made a fool of, and he figured it out, he resigned as Secretary of State. Are you aware of that, sir?
You know, no.
Well, he did.
No.
He did. We spent 20 years in Iraq fighting a war that was based on a fantasy. Now, Saddam Hussein, now, the best place in the entire Middle East, including Israel, the best place to be a Christian was Iraq, not Israel, not our ally, Saudi Arabia, where, by the way, they still crucify people and behead people, our ally, Saudi Arabia. The best place to be a Christian was Iraq. The third in command of the entire country was a Christian. You're not going to see that happen in Israel, are you, Doug?
It's not going to happen. No, we're seeing Hamas go after Christians in Gaza. Go on.
Precisely. And that's a summary of all the wars since 1898. Wars we had no business being involved in. Wars based on fantasy. Wars based on fraud. The only war that was legitimate was the Korean War, where we were not allowed to use the weapon that would have stopped those hordes of Chinese coming across the border, nuclear weapons, which properly and correctly should have been used to stop the Chinese hordes. So the last time U.S. military protected our country from a foreign power correctly and properly and legally was the War of 1812.
Yeah.
That was it. That was it.
A lot of people don't know that, and I appreciate that recap.
Well, let's go to Afghanistan. Well, let's not leave out Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Here's the premise. The premise is about two school bus loads of Saudi Arabians are hiding out in the mountains of Afghanistan. Rather than go and find these guys and take them out, we go to war against an entire country. Because there's 100 guys hiding out in the mountains of Afghanistan. What sense does that make, Doug? That's what we did. And Osama bin Laden Oh, he's hiding out in bunkers. By the way, bunkers built by the CIA when we were fighting the Mujahideen. Where was he? Well, he was in our ally's country, Pakistan. But his villa, and a very nice villa, not a cave or a bunker, his villa was about 2 football fields away from the main gate of the Pakistani equivalent of West Point. Do you think that Pakistani intelligence might have known where Osama bin Laden was?
I believe our intelligence knew exactly where
he was. Of course they did. So I didn't want to leave out Afghanistan. Once again, 20 years.
And by the way, I truly believe bin Laden was a CIA asset, and he was used specifically for the purpose of advancing this oppressive agenda to which we find ourselves today. That's my personal opinion. And you mentioned the Afghan.
The bin Laden family went on vacation with the George Bush family.
Of course.
And when the Mujahideen were our allies fighting the Russians in Afghanistan, that's when bin Laden became an asset of the CIA to fight the Russians who were invading Afghanistan. That's when that relationship began.
You're right, Kimo Sabe. Yeah, yeah. And let's not forget the cluster of the Afghan withdrawal, where we left all this equipment, which is now showing up both in Ukraine and Gaza. Go ahead.
I'm shocked. Well, the international arms trade is, that's two words. The first word is the main word, international. Now, this is nothing new about this. We would occasionally, about every once a quarter or so, we would have a weapons display at the Fourth Court compound where I went for a classified briefing Monday through Friday at 0900, the classified briefing that I in turn briefed my commander, a display of captured enemy weapons. Doug, these weapons from all over the planet. Going back to these World War I Maxim machine guns, water-cooled Maxim machine guns that were used in World War I. And they were showing up in Vietnam as part of the international arms trade. I was surprised and shocked to see the proliferation of arms from all over the world that were being recovered by our forces in the Mekong Delta. So nothing new about the international arms trade being international, is there?
And let's not forget about the Golden Triangle there as well. But nothing new, nothing changes. And that goes to, by the way, that also goes to, I know you've got another topic as well. Nothing is going to change, I believe. Voting is not going to change this. Because they cheat, the left.
Well, I need to.
You give go
some
ahead.
Hope. Go, I want to give some
on.
Hope.
Go on.
And using my state, the state of Missouri, as an example, it's not going to happen in all 50 states because of the corruption in many states. But in Missouri, we have active measures being taken to have Missouri voting take place on one day, no mail-in ballots allowed. Paper ballots with a carbon copy counted at the precinct level. You know, our mutual friend Sam Andrews has been promoting this. I've been promoting it. It's something that it's not going to take place. I know it's hopeless in many of the 50 states. However, the more states we can implement that in, the better off we're going to be, Doug.
Well, today's voting day in Pennsylvania. They're still using the stupid machines and Sharpies and counting, overseas. But go on.
Well, that's what needs to happen in as many states as possible.
Yeah.
I have hope that it will happen in a majority of states. I don't know how long it will take. But I did a presentation in Manila, Philippines, at the home of the former president of the Bank of the Philippines, their equivalent to our Federal Reserve. This is a home where you could meet your 18th birthday, Doug, and never set foot in your own kitchen. Why would you do that? Go in your kitchen? Why would you do that? You never learned how to drive. Why would you learn how to drive? A gated community where the guards carried submachine guns and had 9 restaurants and 3 18-hole golf courses. And One of the attendees was a medical doctor. He spends 6 months a year in the United States making buckets full of money, 6 months in the Philippines helping his people. And he was so proud. He says, John, we're going to get electronic voting machines. And I said, Doc, if whatever you can do, please don't do that. I know you want to be regarded to the Philippines, be brought into the modern era. You want to have free and fair elections. Well, here's what you do. You have voter ID. You have one-day voting. You have paper ballots counted at the precinct. That's what you do, Doc. Please, please, don't go that route. I don't know what effect my speech had on those people. These were wealthy people. I've been around wealth like that occasionally. Most wealthy Americans don't have the servant standing in quarters, quietly waiting to take orders at any given moment. Most American wealthy people do actually drive their own automobiles. But that's not what that kind of wealth is there. It's true wealth beyond the imagination of most Americans. And I hope I had some effect, but I don't know, Doug.
Well, I hope you did. That's obscenely wealthy. But I digress. I want to hit this next topic of which you've been sounding the alarm bells on. John, you've been one in the forefront of this matter. We have seen these injections that no one talks about much anymore. They're still being pushed, and the excess mortality. And your show, the Liberty Man, John Moore radio show. I'm going to tell you something. I've been listening, and I've been listening to what you've got to say about you and your guests have to say about this. Let's talk about the unmentionable of the clot shot injecticide vaccine, ill-named vaccine. Let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, first of all, people like two things when it comes to matters of science and medicine. They like data. They like highly qualified experts, scientists and doctors. What we found out beginning with the COVID clot shot in 2020 is data can be manipulated. The state of Washington, for example, this is one example. In August of 2020, they publicly, it may have been August of 2021, but I believe it's August 2020, they admitted publicly that every gunshot fatality was being listed as a COVID-19 fatality. This is one tiny example. Now, moving forward from there, there's one thing that can't be manipulated as far as data. And here it is. All-cause mortality. That can't be changed. That can't be manipulated. It's hard science, hard data, backed up by death certificates, which, of course, the death certificates themselves can be manipulated, and they are, as to cause of death. But what can't be manipulated is the physical presence of the death certificate. Now, with that as a foundation, here's what we found, Doug, and what's being discussed behind closed doors in the life insurance industry a lot because they're very, very concerned. All-cause mortality in all age groups combined is 20%. There's no precedence for this, Doug. It's never happened since these kind of records have been kept, ever. And what I'm also finding is the CEOs of these insurance companies are in denial. They're saying, oh, it's because of suicide rates. It's because of people not getting proper treatment for their illnesses because of COVID issues. What's being said at a level or two below them, especially among the actuaries, is the reality of what's causing all-cause mortality to be up 20%. But certain age groups, such as men and women between 25 and 45, for example, it's up 40%. There's no precedence for this ever. Even going back to the 1918 Spanish flu, this has never happened.
John, let me ask you this. We can talk about this all day long. Will anyone be held accountable for this?
I'll tell you what should happen, and I'll tell you what will happen. What should happen is everybody down to the file clerk at Pfizer should be charged with some crime. I point out the woman, an elderly woman, recently prosecuted in Europe. She was a teenage file clerk in a concentration camp. She made the coffee. She opened the mail. She put files away. She typed letters. And she was charged with a crime against humanity because of what she did as a teenage girl working in the office of a concentration camp. That's all she did. Which tells me, moving forward 80 years into the present time, that the file clerk at Pfizer, the janitor,
hold that thought for 1 second.
Go ahead.
We're going to drop, we're going to lose Global Star Radio Network. This is Overdrive.